Hello again, all you DG shippers. This is Persephone 33, and I'm once again bringing you the monthly Fire and Ice podcast for April. First up this month is another top 10 list from Maranthardel Bloom, who pointed out one of the cultural differences between Australia and the U.S. the other day was her lack of knowledge about the David Letterman show. When I asked her to write some top 10 lists, she wrote them 1 through 10, and he does them 10 to 1, and I, long story short, I read them wrong. So apologies all around. You can go back to last month's top 10 list and reverse it, and I'm sure it will be much funnier. But without further ado, I bring you the top 10 reasons why Ginny likes Draco by Maranthardel Bloom. Number 10, she can drink him under the table. Number 9, he doesn't mind her manhandling his chest. Number 8, he deals with her moods the right way, with silence and chocolate. Number 7, if she falls asleep on the couch, he'll carry her up to bed. Number 6, he's afraid of her mother. Number 5, he's not afraid of her brothers, unless the whole six-pack is there at once. Number 4, he massages her feet without mentioning the smell. Number 3, he can do her hair. Number 2, he reads her Austin and Dickens by the fire on winter nights. And the number 1 reason why Ginny likes Draco, he indulged her whim and dressed up as Jareth the Goblin King for Halloween. So thanks, Moran. I will be reading two separate stories. The first is completely G-rated. It is called The Clock by J&J Salmon. The second story is rated rather hard PG-13R, and it is called The Barest Hint of Lemon by Appleseed. And so you can listen accordingly. The first story I'll be reading for you this month is The Clock by J&J Salmon. This is the author's favorite story that she's written. She said that she loved the whole personality of the clock itself, as well as Draco being able to care for Ginny because no one else was able to. Draco was her hero. The Clock. Ginny closed the door behind her, but paused before moving in through her childhood home. She stared at the kitchen and tried to remember the way it had been before. Warm, inviting, always loud and full of energy was the kitchen, even when it was just her and Ron. She didn't know if it was all the Weasley hair glimmering in her memory, but the kitchen always seemed to have an orange glow with everyone bustling about and getting into things. She smiled, and then the kitchen changed into its reality. No one was home. No one was left. The burrow wasn't warm and inviting anymore. It was cold and dark. Ginny was the last bit of the once large and loud red-headed family. The only comfort for parents who'd lost everything. Parents who couldn't even live in their family home because of all the painful memories it held. She let her eyes rest on the family clock. The thing she'd come home to retrieve. It was perched, as it always had been, on the far kitchen wall. It had really been an amazing bit of magic once. It was only 8 years ago when all 9 Weasleys had had a hand on it, and it had pointed to what each of them were up to. Her mum had loved it because she'd been able to keep an eye on all of her children without being too nosy about it. Over time, 3 more names had joined the 9 Weasleys in pointing to mortal peril during the war. Only the magic of the clock knew why. But Ginny had her suspicions. The first was Fleur Delacour. She and Bill had been engaged for over a year, but she hadn't appeared on the clock. The family didn't even know anyone else would ever be added on. It wasn't until that night at the hospital, that horrible night they'd lost Dumbledore and Bill had been disfigured by Fenrir Greyback. That was the night the Weasleys finally accepted that Bill really loved the spoilt Frenchwoman and she loved him back. Then, a small silver hand, emblazoned with Fleur, appeared on the clock. The next hand didn't join until the following Christmas. Maybe it had been because the whole family knew Ron had loved Hermione for years, but a silver Hermione joined the rest while the two of them were away with Harry on the Horcrux hunt. They must have finally confessed to each other what everyone in the family and all of Hogwarts had known already, so the clock didn't hesitate. Hermione was considered family, and no one questioned it. It was as it should be. It took another 2 years before Harry finally joined the family he loved best on their magic clock. The three friends had been on the hunt for over a year before Ginny had finished school and joined them. Harry had tried for a year to keep the resolve he had at Dumbledore's funeral. He was strong for a year. Ginny was patient and supportive and really helpful. She knew it was merely a break for them, only temporary. Once the fifth Horcrux was destroyed and all that was left was the snake and Voldemort, Dumbledore's words echoed in Harry's ears. It was Harry's ability to love that made him stronger than Voldemort. Harry realized he'd been wrong to push Ginny away, and he decided he wasn't going to hold her at arm's length anymore. Right then, he grabbed her, embraced her, and started kissing her. While she was surprised, she kissed him back. He told her he loved her, and that he'd loved her all along, but was being stupid. She'd laughed and cried and said she'd known the whole time, but didn't want to push him at the risk of losing him. It was at that time that the Weasley family clock expressed what Mrs. Weasley had been hoping for since seeing Ron and Harry off at platform 9 3/4. Harry and Ginny were meant to be together. The silver hand on the clock proved that. Despite the war, they were able to spend several months of blissfully happy days together at the Burrow while waiting for the perfect moment to strike down the Dark Lord. The war was not kind. Every battle leading to the end took someone that they loved. Every few days, the Death Eaters grew bold again. Hands began to vanish from the amazing magical clock. First, they had lost Percy and Charlie. Their names disappeared one day in the middle of lunch. The family found out later that the Ministry had sought a diplomatic end to the war, and Charlie had been sent as a bodyguard for the Ministry officials, of which Percy was a part. They had all been ambushed and killed. Bill and Fleur had been shot down as they were flying between France and England, carrying important information for the Order. While Harry frantically searched for Voldemort's secret location, the twins and their shop were blown to bits. Only four Weasleys and Harry and Hermione were left on the clock the night of the big battle. Harry had taken Ginny aside and tried to prepare her for the possibility that he might not survive. He'd asked her to hide, to keep herself safe, but she argued that he needed her there. She said he was not going to leave her again. She was right next to him as the four of them walked up the stone stairs at Azkaban, leading the first wave of the attack. Ron and Hermione fought bravely, and eventually they sacrificed their lives to protect the only person who could kill Voldemort. The battle didn't stop, despite losing two of its most valiant soldiers, Harry's best friends, but Harry knew he wouldn't make it if he lost another person that he loved. As he and Ginny crept into the inner chamber together, he was relieved to see that Voldemort hadn't been waiting for them. Harry decided in an instant what he had to do. Kissing Ginny and telling her how much he'd always love her, Harry flicked his wand and stupefied her. He pulled her against the far wall and threw his invisibility cloak on her. Ginny frantically tried to move, remembering that Dumbledore had done the same thing to Harry the night of his death. She was left screaming in her head for Harry to let her go so she could help him. Harry's movement back to the center of the room had been just in time. Seconds later, Voldemort strode into the chamber, flanked by Lucius Malfoy and Rodolphus Lestrange. From the far edge of the room, Ginny could see the whole fight but couldn't help. Full of fear, her thoughts frantically rolled over in her head as she tried to think of anything that would help get her unfrozen. She couldn't reach her wand, and she didn't have any of Harry's talent for wandless magic. She was forced just to watch on until Harry unfroze her or he died, whichever came first. Harry managed to stun Malfoy and to conveniently place an advanced shield charm reflecting a killing curse aimed at him. Instead, it hit its caster, and Lestrange hit the floor with a thud. Because it was only Lord Voldemort and Harry, they walked towards each other, wands drawn. Ginny couldn't hear what they had said, but the actual duel between them didn't last very long. Harry turned from the charred body of the Dark Lord and walked across the room to where he had left Ginny. He had a tired smile on his face. He looked so free, like a weight had been lifted off him. For an instant, Jenny actually believed that they could have forever to finally make each other happy. With his back now turned, Harry couldn't see the now unstunned Malfoy stand up and point his wand at his back. Jenny saw it, but in her frozen state she couldn't warn Harry. Her eyes widened as Malfoy's cold voice hollered, "Crucio!" Harry fell forward in an agony, just a few steps before Jenny's invisible body. Lucius Malfoy walked towards them. His cruel laughter echoed around the chamber as he continued to torture Harry over and over again. "Well, well, well, Potter. So, you've defeated the Dark Lord. I suppose that was to be expected. Now I can conveniently take his place, and there is no one to stop me." His cold voice pierced into Jenny's heart. "I don't think there's a prophecy about it, anyway." He smiled a wicked smile. "Expelliarmus," said an unexpected voice. Underneath the invisibility cloak, Jenny was shocked to see a second platinum head come through the far door, the door she and Harry had entered through. His wand was raised, but pointed not at them, but at Lucius. "Draco, I underestimated you, son. When you left us, I was sure you'd run and hide. Now you're here. And what are you going to do?" Lucius challenged. "Father, it's over now." Suddenly and silently, Malfoy's wand flew back into his hand. It seemed that he was quite adept at wandless magic, too. He directed a killing curse at his son. Dodging it, Draco shot back with a curse unfamiliar to Jenny. "You can't do a killing curse anymore, Father. There is no way to overcome Nox Avada. Just give up. Let the Aurors take you in." "Ugh!" Lucius screamed as he shot curse after curse at Draco. For the most part, Draco shielded them, but one particularly nasty one shot him far across the room and onto the stone wall. Lucius took the time to focus his attention on Harry. "Well, if I can't out and out kill you, I will still enjoy watching you die slowly and painfully." Lucius sneered at Harry and pointed his wand down at him while he coldly whispered, "Avada Hemorrhagia." Harry began coughing. Blood began pouring out of his nose and mouth. "Avada Kedavra!" shouted Draco. His voice echoed in the empty chamber, and Jenny watched as Lucius fell forward onto Harry as the killing curse hit him in the back. "Potter!" Draco ran over and pushed his father's body off Harry's smaller frame. "Potter, what did he curse you with? Potter!" Harry coughed and wiped more blood from his mouth. "Hemorrhagia. There's nothing you can do for me now. Jenny. Weasley? What about Jenny Weasley, Potter? Where is she?" Even Draco sounded frantic. "Stunned. Jenny." He reached his hand in the general direction of her frozen form. Draco quickly cast the counterspell, and Jenny was finally able to move. She ripped off her cloak off the head of her and leaned down over Harry.
"Oh, Harry, why did you do that? I could have helped you. I could see Malfoy. Oh, Harry!"
She touched his arm as he coughed again. More blood spilled from his mouth.
"Malfoy, we've got to do something!"
Harry didn't let her finish. He looked at Draco. "Keep her. Keep her safe." His breathing was shallow and slowing.
"Promise me."
Draco nodded while Jenny looked at them in horror.
"Harry? What are you talking about, Harry? Why does Malfoy need to keep me safe? You're going to be fine. Tell him, Draco!"
She looked up at the blonde boy with tears in her eyes.
"Tell him that he can keep me safe. Tell him!"
"Potter, don't give up. We'll get you somewhere. Somewhere someone can help you."
He didn't sound too convincing, and Jenny could tell he was only saying these things to appease her.
"Too late. You have to take care of her now. Everyone's gone. You have to take care of her for me."
Harry's face was deathly pale. More blood dropped from his nose. He lifted a hand and cupped Jenny's face.
"I lost everyone, but I didn't lose you. I didn't lose you, Jen.
His breathing became even more labored.
I want you to be happy, Jen. Promise you'll be happy for me, okay?
I promise, Harry. I love you.
She leaned over him and cried on his chest. Harry's eyes closed and his hand grew limp.
Jenny began to scream, Harry! Harry, no!
Hysterical, she turned to Draco.
Malfoy, do something! Harry!
She began to pound on Harry's chest, trying to wake him. Draco grabbed her and pulled her away from Harry's still body. The pounding transferred to his chest.
Draco, why don't you do something? We have to do something!
Her pounding slowed.
I've lost everyone. We have to do something.
She collapsed in fitful tears on Draco's chest.
He let her cry for a long time while he patted her back and stroked her hair.
Oh, Jenny, it's okay to cry. You'll be all right, Jenny. They sat there like that for a long time. Jenny sat crying while Draco Malfoy held her. Eventually, other Order members, the few that were left, found them huddled down on the floor next to Harry's body. Professor McGonagall tried to help Jenny up, but Jenny refused to move and stayed right where she was, between Harry and Draco.
We have to get Harry home. He needs to be buried with our family, with the rest of our family. Have you found Hermione and Ron yet?
Jenny asked without emotion as she finally stood up. Tonks, who had got the entire story of what happened from Draco, nodded and tried to lead Jenny by the arm. Jenny turned around and faced Draco.
You promised him. You're coming with me, right?
Confused gray eyes looked up at her.
You want me to? Why?
You tried to save him. You gave him time to say goodbye, and it was what he wanted. Are you going to do what you said you would?
He didn't say anything. He just took her outstretched hand and apparated them to her parents' house. After that, he checked in with her every few days. At first, he helped her and her parents plan the funerals. Harry was the savior of the wizarding world, and the triple funeral was a massive undertaking. Over the next couple of years, he kept his promise to Harry. Draco made sure she was okay, that she had what she needed, and what she needed most was a friend. Eventually, her parents moved out of the burrow, but Jenny couldn't leave. It was her home. Draco came and visited her every day. He did all the little things with her, like shopping and spring cleaning. He did all the big things with her, like escorting her to the Longbottom Parkinson wedding and opening gifts with her and her parents on Christmas morning over hot chocolate. Without even realizing it or saying anything about it, the three remaining Weasleys began to take it for granted that Draco was just another member of the family. He was always there, silently keeping his promise to Harry, until one evening. It was hot that night. Jenny had suggested that they play chess out on the porch. Chess was almost a nightly ritual with them, and Draco usually won. That night, while waiting for him to make a move, Jenny lazily leaned against his shoulder and asked,
Draco?
Yeah, Jen. Draco was still focused on the game board.
Do you get lonely when you go home?
He turned and looked at her for a long time and then sourly looked back down to the board.
Queen to F7.
While his piece moved, he continued gravely, as if he was trying to be particularly clear in his meaning.
Well, Jenny, I'm only home for a short while every day. Otherwise, I'm at work or with you. So, no, I don't think lonely is the right word.
Rook to F7, check. You're right, lonely isn't the right word. When you're not here with me, I miss you. It's like you belong here, and a piece of me is missing when you're gone. A light pink graced her cheeks, but Draco didn't smile. The game forgotten, he lifted himself from the deck chair and paced the porch before she could continue. Finally, he broke the silence.
I just can't do this, Jenny. I won't. It hurts too much.
He turned his back on her and started to go inside, no doubt to grab his cloak and flew home. He only stopped when he felt her touch his arm.
Draco, please don't go.
I can't stay, Jenny. I've got to go home. I can't do this right now.
Let this be your home. Stay with me.
She reached up and touched his face.
Stay with me forever.
He shrugged off her hand and muttered as she walked to the door, I can't, Jenny. I won't be second. If I stay, that's what I'd be.
By the time she followed him in, he was gone without even taking his black cloak with him. It was still hanging on the back of a kitchen chair. Jenny hung the cloak on her arm and was about to flee to Malfoy Manor when a small black velvet box dropped out of the now upside-down pocket and fell to the floor. Jenny picked up the box and was shocked to find a perfect diamond solitaire inside with "I Promise Forever" engraved inside the band. Jenny sat there on the floor gaping when a soft eruption of green flame shook her out of her trance. Draco calmly walked through the gate, looking at his watch.
Jenny, I forgot my...
And then he looked down and saw her and what was in her hand. They stood looking at each other for a long time. Jenny was the first to move. Arm outstretched, handing his cloak to him, she said,
You forgot this.
He nodded, but he didn't say anything.
Is this for me?
Silence fell.
Is it?
Someday.
Today,
she said firmly.
I can't.
She walked the rest of the distance between them and put her hand on his face and said,
Draco, it's been 7 years. You are not second.
I've always been second, Jen.
Shaking her head slowly, but not moving away from him, she said, Do you remember the last thing Harry said to us?
He said it was too late to get help and to watch over you and keep you safe.
He asked you to take care of me once he was gone. The last thing he said to me was how much he wanted me to be happy.
She looked at him straight in his pale gray eyes.
I am happy. I'm happy when I'm with you. I miss you when you're not with me. I go to sleep wishing your arms were around me. I feel a little giddy when you've accidentally touched my hand or patted my back. I love you, Draco Malfoy. I love you for taking care of me when I was all alone. I love you for being my friend. I love you for being you. That's why this ring belongs on my finger today. Not someday, but today it belongs there, Draco.
He didn't have to say anything. He just grabbed her, held her tightly in an embrace, and found her lips with his own, only breaking the kiss once he breathed.
I love you, Jenny. Oh, I love you.
Unbeknownst to the two of them at the time, a little silver Draco joined the three Weasleys on the famous clock that night. It was almost as if the little clock was happy to be put back to good use again. Jenny had been lost in thought for a while, remembering the horrible things that had surrounded the war, remembering the family she'd lost. Familiar cracks, Draco apparating outside, shook her from her reverie. He walked into the kitchen and found Jenny with her back to him. He slid his arms around her and touched her swollen stomach.
Did you find everything, love?
Jenny smiled and pointed at the clock. She knew it was now time to take that amazing bit of magic to her new home. Her new home she shared with Draco. Their new family would soon emboss itself upon the clock, and Jenny knew this small piece of family history would bring that warm orange glow of love into their home now. Jenny was no longer alone. The end. The next story I'll be reading for you is The Barest Hint of Lemon by Appleseed. She wrote this for the Feast Fit contest at LiveJournal, where one stipulation was to feature a recipe of some kind. The Barest Hint of Lemon by Appleseed. Ingredients: 2 cups sifted all-purpose flour, 1/2 teaspoon cream of tartar, 1 1/2 teaspoons baking powder, 8 eggs, and Weasleys and Malfoys are best kept separate. Draco Malfoy smelled like citrus lemons. Ginny didn't know this from any sort of personal experience, but rather from the fact that the Slytherin had the habit of taking his baths at 10:30, and whenever Ginny entered the prefect's bathroom after him, the large pool held the fragrance of lemons. Molly Weasley always smelled of clove and nutmeg. Arthur, like fireplace smoke and hearth and the smell of a worn leather easy chair. Harry smelled like sandalwood and sharp fresh air. Hermione like peppermint and vanilla. Ron like bergamot and root beer. Lavender Brown smelled like sweet pea and sugared plums. Colin Creevy like apples and toffee. But the only scent Jenny could place to the head boy was lemons. She wondered if Harry and Ron, who knew every hateful and spiteful thing Malfoy had ever done or said, knew this. Anyway, Jenny thought, it was an interesting thing to know. Ingredients continued: 2 cups white sugar, 1 1/2 tablespoons grated lemon zest, 1/8 teaspoon salt, 6 egg yolks, and Weasleys and Malfoys shouldn't be left on their own. The prefect meetings and his baths late at night were the closest encounters Ginny had ever had with Malfoy. The first Quidditch game of her 6th year had been against Slytherin, and as all games between Gryffindor and Slytherin were, vicious and fast-paced. Ginny had flown like a demon unleashed, Ron had said proudly afterwards, dodging the whirling players and bludgers with ease and getting quaffles in past the Slytherin keeper. The game had come to a climactic end when both seekers spotted the snitch at the same time. Harry had been halfway across the pitch, but Malfoy had been higher up. He had dropped like a controlled bludger, and he had dived so close to her that when he jarred her shoulder, it felt like he dislocated it instead. The bruises mottled her shoulder joint and turned it different shades of blue, black, purple for weeks afterwards. That was the first and last time Ginny had even come within 20 meters of him on the Quidditch pitch. All in all, there was nothing at all to explain why Draco Malfoy might be standing in her perfumery 10 minutes from closing time. Ingredients continued: 2 cups white sugar, 3 tablespoons grated lemon zest, 4 lemons juiced, 1/2 cup butter, and try not to stand too close to a Malfoy. She had heard he was working behind a desk at the ministry. His main function, Ron had said in passing once at dinner, was to smile and charm and get agreements signed. Staring at him now, Ginny decided that the desk job really hadn't done him any harm. He seemed taller than he had been at Hogwarts. He still had the musculature of a seeker, both light and lean, a seeker's build. The line of his jaw and his cheekbones were sculpted in an aristocratic face, a handsome face. And the wintry gaze and gray eyes were all Malfoy. So were the robes. Ginny reached an unconscious hand up to touch her hair, tied haphazardly back. Just when she determined that she would ignore him, he caught her eye. "Weasley," he said with a small nod of his head. "Malfoy," Ginny said just as coolly, "can I help you?"
"Maybe," he said, looking around before meeting her eyes again. "I need something appropriate to give a friend of mine."
"We have some gift packages," Ginny said calmly, "if that's what you're looking for." Draco stared back at her, an appraising glint in his eyes.
"It's not," he added brusquely, giving the store another long look. "Gift packages are generic, and they don't convey all the effort and time I put into selecting a gift. However," and here he looked deeply irritated, "I have neither the time nor interest to put my mind to it, so I'm enlisting your help. You do run this shop, don't you?" "Yes, your arrogance," Ginny muttered before she could stop herself. He smiled lazily at her. "It's just Draco."
"Who is the recipient of this thoughtful gift?" Ginny asked, ignoring him.
"Janine Lampert," he said promptly.
"Anything else? Is she a blonde, a brunette?"
She's a blonde.
And? Ginny passed by an aisle of shelves, uncomfortably aware of Draco trailing after her. What's she like? Is she an extroverted person or introverted? What's she passionate about?
She's an extrovert. She likes things in blues, and she's quite passionate about...
Draco smiled at nothing in particular. Quidditch. Ginny made a derisive sound in her throat. Here, Clementine, 5-milliliter bottle, classic scent, evokes memories of blue jazz notes and champagne flutes and sequin dresses.
I'll take it, he agreed, uninterested, examining other bottles.
Annoyed at his lack of attention, she said, Don't you even want to smell it? Draco turned his gray eyes on her curiously.
Sure, I intended to. I never buy without testing first. Allow me.
He took the bottle from her smoothly and unstoppered it easily. He dashed a bit of the scented oil onto his thumb and rubbed it into the pulse point on Ginny's wrist. His thumb traced a lazy circle on her wrist, and Ginny stared at his hands holding hers, strong and capable hands. Draco lifted her wrist to his nose and inhaled.
Pleasant, cool, effervescent, like champagne. I'm impressed. Janine will love it, and Bloody Fudge will be satisfied that the delegate from France is happy.
Ginny pulled her hand away quickly, hoping he wouldn't notice that her color had deepened another few shades.
It's one of our more popular scents, she muttered. You created all these? Draco gestured the entire perfumery with one hand.
Yes, Ginny said. We buy the flowers and notes from a place in Italy. I work with Hermione and Luna.
Draco said thoughtfully. Well then, if you'll wrap this up for me, I'll be on my way.
Ingredients, continued. 1/4 cup butter, 6 cups sifted confectioner's sugar, 1 egg yolk, 2 tablespoons lemon juice, and Malfoys are shameless and single-minded. He was staring at her. She could feel it. This is all right, I suppose? Ginny indicated the pale blue tissue paper she intended to use to wrap the bottle.
It's fine, Draco said, a trace of impatience underlying his voice, something hanging off from an unspoken sentence.
Ginny looked up and found him much closer than he had been before. He was leaning forward slightly, hands braced against the counter.
Said Ginny, flustered.
She tried not to notice that her hands were shaking. How have you been?
I've been all right, Ginny, said Draco with a slow grin. So what's your scent? She almost choked on her spit.
Excuse me?
Fragrance, Draco clarified.
Don't you have a scent named after you? Haven't you created some bottle Ginny Weasley?
No, said Ginny in scandalized tones. Do you have a scent?
No, Draco answered easily. I really don't think I have one.
It's lemons, snapped Ginny automatically. Draco arched an eyebrow at her, and a curious smile played on the corner of his lips. Ginny recognized it as the patented Draco Malfoy smile, half-cool smirk.
You've been smelling me?
Ginny couldn't think of a single thing to say. The back of her neck heated up and stayed that way.
Fuck. Tell you what, Draco continued, letting the subject drop for the moment.
He had pulled out a sack of galleons to pay for Clementine.
My mother's birthday is in a few weeks. I'd like you to create a scent for her that won't be reproduced for your clientele. You do take custom orders, don't you?
Yes, Ginny said, feelingly, grateful for the change in subject. But so far, I've done that mostly for friends. I don't know your mother at all. Creating a new scent design for someone means...
Are you free tomorrow afternoon? Draco asked.
I have to watch the shop.
Get someone else, he said, imperiously, cutting her off.
He dropped a beautiful quill on the counter and muttered a spell, his wand held loosely in his hand.
Tomorrow, at 3.
He nodded at the quill.
It'll turn into a portkey to Malfoy Manor, then. You can interview my mother. Get to know her. Ta Weasley.
Ingredients, continued. 4 tablespoons orange juice, 1 1/2 tablespoons grated lemon zest, 3 tablespoons grated orange zest, and a Weasley hasn't set foot in Malfoy Manor for over 60 years. A house elf admitted Ginny, and she was ushered into the conservatory, a sunlit room with beautiful foliage growing in hanging pots. As she waited for Narcissa Malfoy, Ginny examined her faint reflection in a pane of glass. "Miss Weasley," Narcissa Malfoy was gracious in welcoming her guest, "please have a seat. Draco told me you would be coming." "Mrs. Malfoy," Ginny said nervously, "yes, I have a few—" "Narcissa, please. May I call you Ginevra?" "Ginny," Ginny said, and then was appalled. Had she just corrected Narcissa Malfoy? Narcissa smiled indulgently at her. Draco's mother was beautiful. She looked perfect and in place amongst the lavish setting. Narcissa wore a creamy, ivory-colored dress made of some sort of material, cashmere, perhaps, and she looked flawless as she ordered a tea tray from the house elf. "Now," Narcissa began, "Draco hasn't told me why you're here to ask me questions. I'll assume it all has a point and purpose." "Yes, I guess he wants it to be a surprise," Ginny said lamely. "Well, shall we get on with it?" Ginny nodded and went forth with her carefully rehearsed question. By the time she had reached question 16 and Draco Malfoy had not appeared, she began to relax. The house elf had brought in a tray of tea, followed by a tray of individually molded ice cream servings and a silver epergne, filled piled with pedophores. Narcissa was surprisingly easy to talk to. Draco's mother was sociable, frank, and possessed sharp insight. She was also clearly adored by her son and husband. Directions: grease and flour, 4 9-inch cake pans. Preheat oven to 325 degrees Fahrenheit, 165 degrees Celsius. Sift together flour, cream of tartar, and baking powder 4 times. Set aside. You must remember that Malfoys always have an agenda. Ginny was just wrapping up, reluctant to have their conversation end, when Draco Malfoy appeared lounging in the doorway. He looked as comfortable in his black slacks and gray cable-knit sweater as if he were wearing pajamas. Narcissa saw him first. "Draco," Narcissa beamed at him, "Ginny and I were just talking about flowers. She's given me quite a few tips on the upkeep of some of our own."
"Mother," Draco greeted, coming forward into the room.
"Ginny," he added. "We've just finished," Ginny said, quickly rising. "Thank you, Mrs. Narcissa. I had a wonderful time."
"Well, thank you for keeping me company. Lucius is so often away at work, and now that Draco's moved out, my afternoons are often free."
Narcissa rose as well. "Draco, I trust you will see Miss Weasley out."
"Of course, Mum."
Draco's eyes were on her, and he took her elbow as they exited the conservatory.
"Do you know her well enough now?"
"Yes," Ginny said, trying and failing to extract herself from his grasp.
"Will you be going to your shop, then?" Draco inquired crisply.
Yes.
"You can flew there, then," he said decisively, and took her in another direction.
They entered a study, and Draco finally let go of her in favor of stepping back to study her. "What, Malfoy?" Ginny burst out edgily. He smirked.
"How long will it take you to create the fragrance?"
Narcissa had been more remarkable and impressive than the people Ginny had created custom orders for in the past, so she said, "A week, tops, I suppose, maybe even less than that," even while she suspected that hadn't been what Draco intended to say. She rolled her shoulder back nervously and caught Draco's eyes darken.
"You always made my head turn at Hogwarts," he said conversationally, "but you never noticed me."
Directions: 2. Beat 8 egg yolks with a rotary or electric beater until very thick, light, and creamy. Add the 2 cups sugar, a few tablespoons at a time, and continue beating until the mixture is smooth and pale yellow. Stir in 1 grated lemon rind and juice of 1 lemon. Quickly fold in the flour mixture until well incorporated. You will either humble a Malfoy or be humbled.
"What?"
Ginny said again, and this time it was softer, bewildered. You have no idea just how beautiful you look, just standing there, continued Draco, eyes hooded, hands in the pockets of his slacks, his voice lower than usual.
Is this a joke?
Ginny demanded, her voice higher than usual.
I wish. I fancied you since my 7th year.
He took a few steps closer to her and looked like he was prowling towards her. His mercury eyes were narrowed and intent.
I wanted to kiss you until your lips were bruised. I wanted to hear your breath hitch in your throat like mine seemed to do every time you walked past me.
Ginny felt something lodge in her throat, and for the second time in 2 days she was rendered effectively speechless. Draco glowered without rancor.
I caught you once, you know. I saw you snogging Roger Davies when you were on your prefect rounds. I took 50 points from Ravenclaw in the morning. I wanted it to be my hands under your shirt, my tongue down your throat.
When Ginny finally managed to speak, her voice was an undignified squeak.
You wanted?
I want,
Draco rasped, and he kissed her, slanting his mouth hard down across hers. That expressive mouth, so good at taunting and teasing, was good for something after all, Ginny thought dimly. It was a kiss of possession. His lips were perfect, hard and firm, and his hand was sprawled at her lower back, pulling her into him. He captured each fallen sigh like it was a breath he madly needed. Directions 3. In a large glass or metal mixing bowl, whip the 8 egg whites until peaks form. Fold 1/3 of the whites into the batter, then quickly fold in the remaining whites until no streaks remain. Weasleys and Malfoys, Weasleys and Malfoys. She was hardly aware of Draco backing them to the fireplace. He broke the kiss just long enough to grasp a handful of flue powder from a silver vase on the desk, fling it into the fireplace, and stated clearly the address of his flat in London. Then he dragged her into the flue with him, covering her mouth with his all the while. She stumbled a bit into him when they emerged on the other side, and she caught a glimpse of the mostly bare room, still luxurious, before Draco tugged her shirt over her head and dropped it onto the floor. He just as deftly undid her bra and disposed of it in less time than it took for Ginny to inhale sharply. Draco ran his hands through her hair, pushing out all the bobby pins and barely listening to them hit the ground one after another. Her hair was like silk, and after a day in braids, rippled gorgeously in waves, spilling over his hands. He captured her lower lip with his teeth before swallowing her unconscious groan whole with his mouth. The soft wool of his charcoal sweater felt deliciously abrasive against her bare skin. Ginny remembered dimly seeing him a few times in the library at Hogwarts. He had been a conscientious worker, and he seemed to now focus that same concentration on her. She licked at the pulse at his throat, and Draco's knuckles turned white. His hands flew up, one to cup the side of her face, the other to tangle itself in her hair, drawing her nearer. Once Draco ran his tongue in the hollow of her neck, Ginny's eyes flew shut tightly, but now they opened again, and although she was struggling to breathe, she felt a warm satisfaction that his face was slightly more flushed than usual, and his pulse was jumping rapidly. His mouth skimmed down the column of her throat to slide across bared shoulders. She pressed herself against him while she tried to think, even as her hips bucked unconsciously into his. Draco's hand slid down her side to grip her hips still.
Stop! Ginny stammered suddenly.
His blonde head lifted, and Draco Malfoy's gray eyes snapped to hers. His voice was an aggravated question.
Why?
Ginny curled her arms around his neck and tried to think of a good reason.
Why?
He mocked her. His hands still held her place in place against him. He dropped a fumbled, misplaced kiss on her head as she tried to duck away from him.
Let me, Ginny, he whispered.
Directions 4. Spoon into cake pans and bake for 20 to 25 minutes or until cake begins to pull away from sides of pans. Loosen edges with a knife and turn out on cake racks to cool while you prepare the filling and frosting. Malfoys are logical, you see, so you shouldn't feel too badly if you find yourself persuaded. He had somehow managed to maneuver her to the bed, and it only took a gentle nudge and nip of teeth to topple her onto the soft silk linens. And then it's all like feverish poetry, lines running into each other with no end stops. His lips, her neck, the color of his sheets and the color of his shirt that she's just divested him of. His hands, her hips, the way he held her firmly, anchoring her down, both sensing and knowing that she was going to be swept away. His eyes, her breath, the intentness he had as he looked down at her, watching her breath hitch, pressed close, hip to hip. When she comes with a sob as his name is torn from her lips, then devoured by his hungry mouth as his hands continue roaming her body. He continues the rhythm until for a split moment he is still, face tense. Draco held her tightly and rocked them both to sleep. Her breathing was slow and even, and he liked the sound as much as he liked draping a leg over her, imprisoning her with his body. To make lemon jelly filling, mix 6 egg yolks with 2 cups sugar, grated rind of 2 lemons, and juice of 4 lemons. Cook over boiling water, stirring constantly until sugar dissolves. Add 1/2 cup butter and continue cooking, stirring constantly for 20 minutes or until filling is smooth and very thick. Cool, then spread between layers of cooled cake. Narcissa was a slush of crystalline and evocative notes and smelled of night-blooming flowers, light mints, cardamom, lush creamy vanilla, gilded by traces of apple blossom, gentle tea rose, and white musk, and the barest hint of lemon. The fragrance was owled to Narcissa on her birthday in a crystal flagon. The note that accompanied it read, "With love, Draco and Ginny." To make lemon orange frosting, beat the 1/4 cup butter until it has the appearance of thick cream. Stir in 6 cups confectioner's sugar, a little at a time, and continue working until mixture is very smooth. Beat in 1 egg yolk and 2 tablespoons lemon juice. Stir in enough orange juice to make a spreadable frosting, then add grated rind of 1 lemon and 2 grated orange rinds. Spread on sides and top of cake. Malfoys usually get what they want, but Weasleys are never unhappy. The end. I do want to mention that I was going to read a third story, but this thing got way long and out of control, and I will read Proving the Point by Humbug Girl another month. If you want to nominate a story to be read, or if you have suggestions or comments or anything further to do with the podcast, you can contact me, Persephone33, through the forums or on the archive, or email me at Persephone3333@gmail.com. May will have an angsty dark theme, so if you have any dark or particularly angsty fics you'd like to recommend, send them on. And I would like to wish a very happy birthday to Manu and Nun Outfits Are Cool. I hope everybody who has an April birthday has a great month. I'll see you next month, guys. Bye-bye.